Okay, it is July 2nd, 2024. I was going to say 2022, but lost a couple years there. I'm at the Oakwood Retreat Center somewhere in Indiana, and we are here to practice meditation, talk about recovery and Dharma, and all that. I believe that I need to perform a function, a bodily function. I'm going to pause, turn off my sound. Okay, then. So, I'm trying to figure out this chair. Well, all right, it'll work. So we're going to sit for 20 minutes. If you want to settle into a comfortable posture, actually, I'm going to get. I'm like, I need a cushion behind my back. Sorry. Try again. There we go. All right. Oops, someone else in the waiting room. Let him in. All right, just settling into your posture. Close your eyes or just lower your gaze. Just letting the body come to stillness. And even that initial moment of stillness is a interesting moment to just feel that. Things that are going on in our body, just ordinary sensations. Most of the time we don't pay attention to them. So just to stop and be aware of how you feel right now is a good mindfulness practice. Just brings you into the present moment nicely, in a kind of easy way, not trying to force some kind of meditative experience, just feeling yourself sitting. And then having a sense of settling. If you can just naturally, again, just release tension. We can use the breath for this. The in-breath is kind of opening, rising up. The out-breath is a release. And that naturally leads to awareness of the breath. Feeling the breath at the nostrils or the belly. But really, as a holistic experience, the whole of the breath. However, it's easy for you to connect with breathing. That can be helpful. Make a soft mental note with the breath of in, out. If you're following the breath at the nostrils or rising, falling, if you're following the breath at the belly, the words are just a way to remind you to apply mindfulness to your breath. Yes. Very commonly, thoughts that continue to move through the mind. Well, if they don't completely capture your attention, just letting them come and letting them go, just letting them pass through the mind. Staying with the breath as best you can. If you find yourself completely caught up in thinking, losing touch with the breath and the body, and making more of an intentional effort to let go, to direct the attention back to the breath, you might make an observation of what the thought was about, what was behind it. Not getting into a narrative or analysis, but just noticing, oh, where is my mind? What is that about? But then reconnecting the breath. And here we try start to pay attention to the particulars of the sensations of breathing. The distinction between the in-breath and the out-breath. The breath deep or shallow, smooth or coarse. Noticing the te temperature of the breath, the in-breath, often a different temperature from the out-breath. Just noticing that. We're noticing all this in order to strengthen the concentration in an organic way without straining or striving, just bringing curiosity to the experience. No, we're not trying to block out everything but the breath. We have the breath in the foreground of our awareness. A lot of other aspects of experience come forward. We explore them as well, right? Maybe one of the hindrances, feeling of desire or aversion, or some energetic feeling of sleepiness or restlessness, doubt, Or it might be on a felt level, a mood or emotion that's underneath the mind state, realizing that there's some mood that's influencing our thoughts and our attitude in this moment. And breathing with that, feeling that, not trying to push that away or transcend. Just being with these experiences, however they arise, fearlessly, with kindness, with compassion toward ourselves, toward our mind, toward our bodies. Well, I rang the bell, but Zoom doesn't seem to like my bell anymore, so. It didn't come through, did it, the bell? That's so annoying.
I get to retreat.
What's that?
I like when it's at the retreat, it's not loud enough. You need a big bell.
No, but I mean, it's this bell is perfectly loud to be picked up on a microphone. It's not, there's no reason. It's that
It is
the
weird.
Zoom suppresses the sound of anything that's not a voice.
That's right. Yeah. Kevin, I was going to just say the same thing. When I've been running my meditations, the same thing. I got a little song bell. And I was ringing it for 2 years before people told me they never heard the thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't, whatever. So.
Well, it used to work when they had the thing where you turned the musician sound on,
Oh.
but they changed the interface and anyway. All right. Such problems. I know some people use the Insight Timer bell. And if that's on your computer, I think it might play. Well,
Spotify. I was on a little retreat and they use Spotify.
oh, really?
They have, if you look up bells and stuff, you
Right,
can.
good. Thank you. I'll see about that. So it's interesting for me, like it's 1 o'clock here, and it's just, I'll tell you, my energy meditating is so different from how it is at 10 o'clock in the morning. At 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm clear. 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I was ready to fall asleep. It's amazing how, so just that's why I always suggest to people, like, really, when you're working on your kind of establishing meditation retreat, meditation practice, notice what time of day you're able to stay alert and meditate at that time of day. Like, people will meditate right before they go to bed, and that's not really that helpful, in my opinion. So, for those of you who are following along, last week, from the lobby of the B.B. King Museum, where I was teaching from, I was trying to remember this particular quote from the Simile of the Saw. So I've got it in front of me now. I don't have to remember it. Memory being what it is. Oh, thank you for letting that person in. Hang on a sec. Okay. Let's hope that little bit of caffeine stimulates me. So this is from the Simile of the Saw. And it's talking specifically about when you are angry with someone or in conflict with them and how you should work with that. And this is what the Buddha says. You should train thus. Our minds will be unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare with a mind of loving kindness without inner hate. We shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And starting with them, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. So, I find this passage both helpful as guidance, and also, poetic and beautiful as literature. So I want to go through it. First of all, it's interesting that the Buddha is he's trying to plant thoughts or words in your mind. You should train thus. And then you're supposed to sort of think like this. So I'll put it in the first person, so the singular rather than the plural. My mind will be unaffected. So right away, I find that a really, helpful and interesting instruction. Obviously, you're kind of doing this when your mind is already affected, right? So you're saying, oh, I'm gonna let me kind of pull myself out of this mood or this attitude. And so a mind that is unaffected, what the term that comes to mind for me is equanimity, one of the really valued qualities in Buddhism. And what's distinctive about the quality of equanimity is that if you encounter, let's say, a pleasant experience, sensation or a pleasant sense impression, you don't fall into grasping. Your mind is unaffected. If you encounter something unpleasant, and in this case it's a person, you don't fall into aversion. Sorry, I did not turn off my phone. It made a noise. You probably didn't hear it because, Zoom. Really what I'm hearing in this instruction is one should maintain equanimity, undisturbed. My mind will be unaffected. And, it's an ideal, right? But it's, and we're trying to implant this idea in our mind. It's not that we're trying to say, I won't, nothing will affect me. I'm just not going to feel, we don't, because that just turns into aversion, right? If you're in resistance, that's not being unaffected. You're actually affected by it. You're trying to get away from it. So we have to be very careful with how we understand this idea of equanimity or our mind being unaffected. But there's a great teaching. It's called protecting or guarding the senses, and it really applies to addicts, who might get triggered by something like, being in a liquor, in the liquor aisle at Trader Joe's by accident, but to like develop this kind of quality that when something is coming at you that's really what could affect you, could trigger you, that you kind of have a sense of just a invisible shield. Like it's just, I see it, but I'm not going to go beyond just seeing. I'm not going to buy into the thoughts and feelings that might arise. I just see it. I'm aware of it. And then I move away, right? I don't stay there in the liquor aisle going, I see it. I see it. I see it. I'm not affected. No, I'm not playing with that, right? But we encounter sense experiences. We can't avoid them. There's this, Aya Kama talks about this. She says there are some monks who misunderstand this, and they won't look at a woman, and they'll have like a little fan or something they'll put up in front of their face, and they won't look at a woman. She says that's not the idea of guarding the senses. It's actually a mental guarding, right? So just to reflect on that, if it's food, that, okay, I see it, but I'm not moving toward it, but I'm not afraid of it. I'm just like, I see it, it's there. And so this is part of the process of mindfulness, which is to be able to break down the elements of experience. It's a critical piece of mindfulness to realize that there are these elements of experience, or our ordinary mind just sees it as like, this is happening, but with mindfulness, and we see this in meditation, you realize There is the object, and then there is the perception, the seeing or the experience. I'm just using vision because that's an easy one. You know, the seeing or the smelling or the hearing of the object. After that come their first, there's that first impression. It's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Now you can't do anything about any of those things. If your eyes are open, you're going to see things and you're going to have feeling pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral reaction to it. But right there is where the trigger goes, the trigger that pushes you into wanting or not wanting, into desire or aversion. And that's where, if we are mindful, we can see, oh, that's happening right now. I don't have to engage in that. And that's the wisdom, right? The wisdom of understanding that this is not an automatic process. I am not forced into it. I'm not a victim of my senses. I can make choices in this moment. And so mindfulness gives us this choice to turn away, to not engage. I see it, I'm not engaging. So the first line, our minds will be unaffected. This is what's beautiful about the suttas. There's so much in it, right? And that teaching alone is enough for so much, that we can gain so much from working with that. So the next line is, we shall utter no evil words. So this, I have added a line to this for my own uses, where I say, I shall utter no evil words, nor harbor unwholesome thoughts. Because to me, it's not enough to not say anything. I also need to not get caught up in my mental reaction, because we're talking here about someone that we're angry with or that we're getting triggered by, right, in a negative way. I'm trying to have my mind be unaffected, and I'm not going to get into that story. No harbor, no evil thoughts. So this whole passage progresses. Now it says, we shall abide compassionate for their welfare with a mind of loving kindness without inner hate. So this one of the things that the Buddha does in this passage and in this sutta is that he moves between cultivating loving kindness and letting go of anger. And I just think, and if you're familiar with my book, Living Kindness, this is a really important distinction. When we teach loving kindness, there can be this idea that, oh, I'm just supposed to love everybody. And it's like, you know, you get to a point where you're like, yeah, well, there are limits, you know? And that's why I really like the idea of, okay, just don't hate them. And the Buddha, again, kind of goes back and forth with these. Will abide compassionate with loving kindness without inner hate. So if you can't arouse the loving kindness and the compassion, then maybe you can just be like, all right, I'm not going to get into this negative story about this person. I'm not going to dwell in this hatred. I'm just going to try to let go of the hatred, because that's enough, right? That's really what the goal here is. I mean, you know, is to just not get spun out on it. But I will say, I think it's worth contrasting the compassion and the loving kindness. For me, it's easier for me to feel compassionate for someone who I have negative feelings toward than it is to necessarily feel loving kindness for them. Like, because I can definitely remember that, first of all, everybody suffers. And if somebody is behaving badly, I can remind myself that the two things about that. One is they're behaving badly because they probably feel badly, and that they're expressing their bad feeling through behavior. And secondly, if I believe in the law of karma, if they behave badly, there's going to be bad results from it. Now, I don't want to get into that whole, like, oh great, well, they're going to suffer for this, you know, that, because that's of course just another form of hatred, really, of cultivating. But to realize, oh, you know, they're hurting, you know. I mean, they're being a jerk or whatever, but let me. So just and that's very different from me from, oh, may they be happy, may they be peaceful. Like that to me is sort of like the hardest thing to get to with the difficult person, which is what we're kind of talking about here in the traditional loving kindness framework of like the dear one, the neutral one, the difficult one. This is basically about working with the difficult one. And now he goes into this section, which is so beautiful. I shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. So, this is very, of kind of a visualization, but also like a heartfelt sense of giving, of offering. Someone asked me, what does imbued mean? And, I had a sense of it being this thing that's like you're filled with it. But I looked it up, and one some part of its etymology, part of its the root of the word has to do with water. And so with being, so we think about like a sponge being filled with water, right? Kind of imbued. And that's the language that the Buddha uses when he's talking about the jhanas, the deep meditation states. He talks about you steep, steeped, drenched, and it's the language is often what like liquid. And I find that interesting, maybe because I'm a Pisces, but besides that, like there's a connection for me between like the fluidity of this of these feelings. Like emotions are often described in kind of liquid terms, and the so this kind of fluidity and this idea that you're going to imbue something or steep something, drench it with loving kindness, or drench it with, in the case of the jhanas, with rapture and happiness. So this can be a very helpful kind of felt visualization, if there is such a thing, in your meditation. And not maybe all the time, but if you are having a good sitting, let's call it a good sitting, where the mind is pretty settled and you're kind of feeling pretty grounded, to start to have a sense of like having yourself be filled with this energy. Filled with calm or filled with loving kindness. And you, just as the Buddha says, he says, we shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. So starting with yourself, pervading yourself with loving kindness, filling yourself. So if you can tune into that, I know that's not going to be a sense that everybody is going to connect with, but I find it very helpful. To kind of connect with this feeling of being filled up and permeated and drenched with these qualities. So, but again, going over this line, I shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. So my mind is imbued with loving kindness, and I'm pervading them with that. But then he takes it. Beyond this individual, we're working with this difficult person. But then he says, and starting with them, I shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness. So, starting with this difficult person, but then the sense of, just radiating outward, right? The all-encompassing world. And then we find, then again, this other beautiful phrase, abundant, exalted, immeasurable. Just so, and these are, I've taken to giving guided loving kindness meditation using these words and repeating these phrases, just abundant, exalted, immeasurable. If you get into a place of just like, feeling that energy of loving kindness. And just letting these words drop in, abundant, exalted, immeasurable. right away to end the set line, he goes back again without hostility and without ill will. It's so interesting that he does this because you would think that, well, if I'm pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, certainly I don't have any hostility or ill will. But it seems to me that what the Buddha is saying is stay vigilant. Because even when you are trying to be loving to everybody, this stuff can slip in. So make sure, that you're keeping an eye out, watch out of the corner of your eye that, okay, may all beings be happy except them. Oh, wait, oh, wait, let me keep that. Let me catch them too, and that kind of just not get, I guess the other way I think of it is like, don't get too swept away with this feeling. It's a beautiful feeling and it's very helpful. And it's a great way to meditate. But we can start get, well, first of all, we can get attached to that feeling, right? We can be like, oh, that I need my loving kindness now. I need to go there. And if it's not happening, there can be frustration. But further, it can be, we can start to equate meditation and loving kindness with this feeling. And what is the key thing that we know about feelings? They are impermanent. We can't hold on to them. And so, great, get into it, but don't start, we can get into this almost like self-hypnosis with the meditation, where we're just like, oh yeah, I'm just in this space. And if you're a recovering addict or an active addict, that can be a very familiar place. It can be a place of hiding out and escapism. I've you've If you've been around the last few months, you've probably heard me talk about my sense when I was on the 6-week retreat last fall that there were people who were practicing like that, who were kind of just trying to zoom into their happy place and walk around all day in their happy place. I was like, that's not wisdom, That's not insight. That's a pleasant mind state, but it's not freedom. Freedom is when your mind is unaffected, when you're not disturbed, when you're able to engage, oh, this is really unpleasant. It's okay. Oh, this is lovely and wonderful. It's okay. I'm not going to get caught up in it. So that balance, that equanimity, I think is so important. So this is a beautiful passage. As I said, it's from the Simile of the Saw, which is from the Majjhima Nikaya, the Middle Length Discourses. It's the 21st discourse in there. And I'm going to read through this one more time. You should train thus. My mind will remain unaffected, and I shall utter no evil words, nor harbor unwholesome thoughts. I shall abide compassionate for their welfare with a mind of loving kindness without inner hate. I shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And starting with them, I shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. So, beautiful words. Hope you find that helpful. And we have some time left if people would like to chime in. Oh, there you go, Robin. Hi.
Hi. So I have two questions.
Okay.
One, the saw simile, later in that simile, doesn't the Buddha talk about having loving kindness when they act when someone is actually using the saw to remove your limbs? I
Yeah,
isn't that
that's where the title of the sutta comes from, and that's the most famous on in it, even if bandits were sawing off your limbs one by one with a two-handled saw. I actually have that here. Even if bandits were to sever you savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handled saw, one who gave rise to a mind of hate toward them would not be carrying out my teaching.
Yikes. That's a
Well,
that's
this is why I maintain humility
yeah.
in regards to these teachings. This is one of the reasons I do. And recognize that I have not fulfilled the Buddhist path. I'm still on it. But it's enough to work, until and unless you're faced with that situation. We can, I think, just work with this idea of letting go of hatred. And it's when the Buddha talks about hatred, he's so vehement about its destructive impact on us. He says it's really creating suffering for you, that hatred, and that so it's never worth doing. It just considers it to be a useless state. But yeah, it's more like what an order. I can't go through with it and read and through, right?
Yeah. So the second part is the other side of that coin, the attachment side. So, and here's my very strong example, and I am still so self, because I'm so new at this, and I don't know, maybe that's an ongoing, thing, but okay, so here it is. I love this class so much. I feel more comfortable here with like-minded people and getting this teaching and doing this meditation I mean, I do it on YouTube too, but it like I'm working my schedule around this class. This is so important to me, and it's like attachment. So
Well,
is there a line where is that line between, okay, I love being around like-minded people, that's what's healthy for me, and oh, I'm too attached to this.
I mean, I think it's there's a distinction between unwholesome attachment or unwholesome desire and wholesome desire. So wanting to be part of this class is a wholesome desire, right? It's there's nothing harmful about it. If you miss it sometime, see how that feels. I think you'll be okay. It's an opportunity to but it's not like the type of attachment that's really gonna harm, oh my God, if I miss that class, I'm gonna fall into a pit of despair, it's just like I mean, it's really, as I say, it's a wholesome attachment, like it's uplifting, right? Oh, it's exciting. Oh, good, I get to see this class. I'm happy about that. I feel connected to people. I feel like I'm gaining something. That is exactly what the path is meant to be. To remember, there are four kinds of effort. There's the effort to avoid the unwholesome, the effort to abandon and let go of the unwholesome. Then there's the effort to cultivate the wholesome and the effort to maintain the wholesome. So you're just talking about cultivating and maintaining the wholesome. There's nothing unhelpful about that. It's not like you're addicted to my class, right? If that were the case, then I would have to just start charging $10,000 per class, and then I could really, if you guys were addicted, I could really get rich, you know. Tanya.
Hey there, Ken. I'm just wondering where, what book you're getting that particular phrasing from, because I'm not finding it. I like the word exalted, and I'm not finding that. So can you tell us where you're?
So this is Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. So there are different translations. I didn't look at the translation that Monica put up there, but I presume if it's from let's see, I'm trying to put it up. Oh, it's from Sutra Central. I'm not sure who translated that.
Can you type out Bhikkhu Bodhi
But yes, I can.
for
I
those
will.
of us who are clueless?
Yes, Bhikkhu Bodhi. So Bhikkhu is just the means monk. So that's just an honorific, and Bodhi is his name. So Bhikkhu Bodhi in the middle length discourses, and he actually he's the co-translator with Bhikkhu Nanamoli. So sometimes when you're searching for it, and you can get it on Kindle. It's a big thick book. There's 157 suttas in it, and it costs like $50. So that's why I don't usually say, oh, you have to get this book. I mean, people have preferences with different translations, and I simply was exposed to Bhikkhu Bodhi's translations first, and I'm kind of too lazy to like get into other translations. I just find it gets confusing, and it's like, okay, let me just stick with that one. So, yeah. It's a wonderful book if you can afford to buy the middle length discourses. I've done a lot of my teaching has been I've used that a lot in my teaching. In my book, Living Kindness, references several of the suttas in there. Abigail, hello, hello.
Good morning. Good morning. Good
Morning.
afternoon. Good day.
Good night.
I think that Bhikkhu Bodhi, incidentally, is online. I think you could just go online and look at it all.
You can find some. I don't know if it's all there, but some of it is. Some of it has been. I do sometimes discover. In fact, this sutta, someone on this retreat, the person who's running the retreat was got a copy of it off the internet for me. So, anyway,
Anyway, that's not what I was going to say.
right.
I recently I read a book. This is a Sutta study book study group that I'm involved in here in Eugene, Oregon,
Okay.
which has a wonderful, wonderful sangha. And anyway, it's a book by Christina Feldman called Boundless Heart, I think. But she added a phrase to the common loving kindness canon of, I wish you may be happy, I wish you may be, and the phrase changed it completely for me to be possible in impossible situations. And the phrase is, may you be happy in the midst of all this. May you find peace. May you be peaceful in the midst of all this. And it's exactly what you're saying. We In the midst of all my mind being totally crazy, may I still be happy. In the midst of my mind wishing you ill will, may I still wish you happiness. And it just for a reminder, in the midst of all this.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful. And what comes up for me, Abigail, is in the midst of this world that we're, and as the world is going mad, or I don't know what it's doing. It's just being itself, but in the midst of all that as well. You're right.
In the midst of those robbers sawing off your limbs.
Yes. So internally and externally, in the midst of the internal and the midst of the external. Yeah,
Right.
that's great. I mean, I think it's so interesting how I love that you said like that, just that phrase, change it like that. And each of us, it's helpful to stay attuned to these types of things. What that like, oh, that clicks for me. And oh yeah, and then follow that, use that, you know, that the way meditation is taught, oftentimes, especially when we're a beginner, we feel like, oh, I've got to do it this way. This is how the teacher said to do it. And then we can get kind of, and it might not work for us what they're offering. And then you can work for years. And then, like, you hear something else, you're like, oh, that, I can do that. And so to stay open and be creative with your own practice and you know, check out different things, try different things, experiment, and see what clicks. You know, my practice has changed radically over the years. I mean, you know, the ordinary person, if I described it to them, it wouldn't sound very radical to them, but to me, it's radical. But certainly the way I offer meditation is very different. Like I used to offer a much more kind of structured way of meditating. And these days I just kind of like throw it out there. Like, all right, sit, feel, what are you feeling? What's showing up? Well, feel your breath, you know, let there, you know, let there be space in your mind. And that's not going to work for everybody either. Like some people need something very structured. And certainly when I started to practice, I wanted something very structured because the idea of like, oh, just sitting there was like, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, it was only after years of practice that it was like, oh, I could just sit here. I don't really have to do a lot. But in the beginning, I was like, okay, in, out, thinking, hearing, hearing. And I would just do all that noting and kind of, and that helped me to stay, to get through it, you know. Because really, the most important thing is to just practice. The form that you take on isn't nearly as important as the fact that you do it on a regular basis. And so whatever supports you in your practice, as long as it's not harmful, you know, wishing ill will, for instance. Well, oops. Thank you all for showing up. I'm really glad that I was able to get here and get set up on the Zoom on the Wi-Fi here and see you guys. I kind of, you know, several days I've been planning to like be here at the right time, and I had to get made sure I had the password. So, I'll be back home tomorrow. Not tomorrow, sadly, for next Tuesday. And hope to see you all then. And keep practicing. And the Friday night class at 5 o'clock still goes on without me. So hope you guys are hanging out there.
For anybody who tried on Friday, we couldn't sign
Oh yeah,
in.
that was my fault.
Yeah.
I was
So
using Zoom, yeah.
we apologize for that, but
I apologize.
okay.
Yeah,
It'll all work out in the end.
I've just started now to just to have a Zoom meeting that I offer to the people that I have been on retreat with. So that was for the people I was on retreat with last weekend. And so I'm going to set up something next week as well, but it won't be at that time. I'll make sure to avoid that time. Yeah. All right. Peace, everybody.
Thank you, Kevin.
Donate
Thank you,
all of your
Kevin.
money to the Democratic Party, and then we might be able to.
Thank
Your
you,
mouth to
Kevin.
God's ears.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank
All right.
you.
Bye. Thanks,
Thanks,
Monica.
Kevin. Take care of yourself, okay?
All right, Bill. Good to see you.
How's your